Welcome to No Longer Conformed. I'm Eric Garthy, and we are studying Living in Awe of God, a series from the book of Exodus. In this session, we'll be looking at Exodus chapter 1, the movement of God's plan. You've most likely heard the expression, there are no such thing as accidents. Everything happens for a purpose. As a Christian, you are not where you are by accident. God has either directed you to where you are, or He has allowed you, because of your own choices, to be where you are. And regardless of where you are today, whether it is in a time of prosperity, a time of persecution, a time of pleasure, a time of pain, God not only knows where you are, but He wants to use your circumstances to move His plan forward and bring glory to Himself. This is true in the life of individual believers. It's also true of churches. And it was true of the nation of Israel. This is an important message of the book of Exodus. To have a good understanding of the context and the content of Exodus, a few basics will help us clearly see the rest of the book. First, Exodus is a book of theology, and here are truths clearly taught in Exodus. God is God of redemption. Exodus records how He redeemed His chosen people out of Egyptian captivity, which was a picture of His plan of salvation that was accomplished through Jesus Christ. God is a knowable God, a knowable person. He revealed Himself to His people. Exodus reveals God to us in a knowable way. God is the covenant God. At Sinai and at Calvary, God entered a covenant relationship with His people. God promised land for His people. For Israel, it was Canaan. And for us, it's heaven. The Exodus is an example to show that our walk through this world will be rewarded when we reach the land He has promised for us. God is personal. He was with the people through a pillar of smoke by day and a pillar of fire by night. Today, He is with us by the Holy Spirit. We are never alone. God demonstrates His glory. In Exodus, God works signs and wonders in Egypt and in the wilderness in the lives of His people. God calls His people to be different. He calls His people to be different from the rest of the world. God calls the Israelites to separate themselves from the Canaanites. And He calls us to be His ambassadors to the world around us. God calls His people to follow Him. He called Israel to follow His leadership, and He calls us to follow the leadership of the Holy Spirit through life. God is omnipotent. There is nothing too hard for Him to do. He can produce water in the desert, make food fall from the sky, and destroy powerful enemies. There is nothing God cannot do. God is sovereign. There is no one, there is nothing which can stop the forward movement of God's plan. His eternal, overarching eternal plan cannot be thwarted. Despite our choices, God's plan will come to pass in His way and in His time. God is sovereign. Second, Exodus is a book of history. In this book, God gives us an accurate account of historical events from His point of view. He has chosen not to tell us everything that happened, but what He does tell us is of great importance. We must be careful not to miss it. we should look at Exodus on three levels. Level three is the big picture. This is where we deal with the bigger issues like creation, the fall of man, and God's plan of redemption. Level two is God in history. Here we see God working in and through history to preserve a people for himself. The entire Old Testament finds God dealing with Israel as a nation. Not only because they were his chosen people, but because the Messiah would come from them. And then level one is the narrative, the story. This is the level in which we interpret the story. Here we find God working in the lives of individuals, which reveals how God also works in our lives. And then third, Exodus is a book of continuation. It's essentially a sequel to Genesis. Chapters 1 and 2 are a bridge. These two chapters connect what God has done in Genesis to what he's going to do in Exodus. If you really want to be prepared for this series of messages, go back and read Genesis. What happens in Exodus is based on promises God made in the book of Exodus. In the book of Genesis. All this introduces our text, Exodus chapter 1. And I want to bring to your attention four things. First, God moves his plan through the past. Look at verse 1 of chapter 1. Now these are the names of the children of Israel who came to Egypt. This passage takes us back to the story of Joseph, sold into slavery by his jealous brothers, his rise from slavery to be second only to Pharaoh in the nation of Egypt. It reminds us of the famine that brought his brothers searching for grain and the family reunion that resulted. Joseph forgave them and the entire family moved to Egypt. All this happened to preserve God's chosen people. For the Israelites who were now in slavery, this was ancient history, more than 400 years earlier. It's easier to read the Bible and see God working through history than it is for us to see how he's worked the same way in our individual lives. There are two pitfalls in considering our past. First, don't disregard the past. The past demonstrates how God will work in the future. Deuteronomy chapter 7, verse 17 to verse 19. If you should say in your heart, these nations are greater than I, how can I dispossess them? You shall not be afraid of them, but you shall remember well what the Lord your God did to Pharaoh and to all Egypt. The great trials which your eyes saw, the signs and wonders, the mighty hand and the outstretched arm by which the Lord your God brought you out. So shall the Lord your God do to all the peoples of whom you are afraid. The past assures us that God will do it again. And second, don't get stuck in the past. Someone wrote, the past is a guidepost to the tomorrow, not a hitching post to yesterday. In verse 1, God chose to point to Israel's past to show the connection between where they had been to where they are now and to where they were going. God has a plan for each of us to move us from where we are to where he wants us to be. When we get focused on keeping things the way they have always been, we become unable to see God's future. Don't get stuck in the past. Second, God moves his plan through his provision. Look at the second part of verse 1 and then verse 8, who came to Egypt. Whenever we hear the word Israelites and Egypt together, we're tempted to think of their slavery. But when God sent his people into Egypt, it was not for them to be persecuted, but it was for their provision. Originally, Egypt was a place of blessing, not a burden. And yet God often allows his blessings to become a curse when we try to hold on to what he's provided instead of pursuing the future he has for us. Genesis 50, verse 24 down to verse 26. And Joseph said to his brethren, I'm dying, but God will surely visit you and bring you out of this land to the land of which he swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. And then Joseph took an oath from the children of Israel, saying, God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here. And so Joseph died, being 110 years old, and they embalmed him, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt. They knew they were supposed to go back to Canaan, but over time, they became comfortable. And when we're comfortable, there is a tendency for us to become complacent and to forget that life is not about our enjoyments. They stopped looking forward to the promised land. How many of us are so content that we would rather fight to preserve what we have than to allow God to provide something even better? But the Lord is faithful to deal with us. Look at verse 8 of chapter 1. Now there arose a new king over Egypt who did not know Joseph. And then third, God moves his plan through our pain. Verses 9 to 14 is what we want to look at. To fully appreciate verse 8, we need a history lesson. The Pharaoh who ruled when Joseph was living was of a people group called the Hyksos. The Hyksos. They were foreigners who had conquered Egypt and ruled for centuries. Amos, the founder of the 18th dynasty, raised up an army and drove the foreign invaders out of Egypt. Because they had been ruled for so long by foreigners, the Egyptians had an inbred hatred of foreigners. The Israelites were foreigners. They were ethnically different from the Egyptians. In fact, they were more like the Hyksos than the Egyptians. So a pharaoh came to power who saw things differently. Joseph had been in league with the hated Hyksos. In the eyes of the Egyptians, they were friends to their enemies, which made the Israelites enemies. So verses 9 down to verse 14. And he said to his people, look, the people of the children of Israel are more and mightier than we. Come, let us deal shrewdly with them, lest they multiply and it happen in the event of war that they also join our enemies and fight against us and so go up out of the land. Therefore they set taskmasters over them to afflict them with their burdens. And they built for Pharaoh supply cities, Pithom and Ramses. But the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied and grew. And they were in dread of the children of Israel. So the Egyptians made the children of Israel serve with rigor. And they made their lives bitter with hard bondage, in mortar, in brick, and in all manner of service in the field. All their service in which they made them serve was with rigor. The Egyptians were wrong in the way they treated the Jews. But it was God who permitted it. Sometimes God allows pain in our lives to get us ready to do what he wants us to do. C.S. Lewis, in his book, The Problem of Pain, said, pain plants the flag of reality in the fortress of a rebel heart. God whispers in our pleasures, speaks in our conscience, but shouts in our pains. It is His megaphone to rouse a deaf world. And then fourth, God moves His plan through our obedience. Verses 15 down to verse 22. In the middle of difficulties, it is easy to be tempted to compromise. It's easy to be tempted to try and appease those who are causing our pain, even when we know that doing so would be the wrong thing. But what is called for during difficult times is faithful obedience, something God will bless. Verse 15, and then the king of Egypt spoke to the Hebrew midwives, of whom the name of one was Shipra, and the name of the other Pua. And he said, when you do the duties of a midwife for the Hebrew women, you see them on the birth stools. If it's a son, then you shall kill him. But if it is a daughter, then she shall live. But the midwives feared God and did not do as the children of Egypt, as the king of Egypt commanded them, but saved the male children alive. So the king of Egypt called for the midwives and said to them, why have you done this thing and saved the male child alive? And the midwives said to Pharaoh, because the Hebrew women are not like the Egyptian women, for they are lively and give their birth before the midwives come to them. Therefore God dealt well with the midwives, and the people multiplied and grew very mighty. And so it was, because the midwives feared God, that He provided households for them. So Pharaoh commanded all his people, saying, every son who is born you shall cast into the river, and every daughter you shall save alive. Listen, you might be going through a difficult time in your life. Maybe it's financial and you're tempted to rob God and not give the tithe. Maybe it's family. Those who don't love Jesus are trying to pull you away. Maybe it's work. The boss is trying to get you to do what you know is wrong. Stand your ground, like Shipra and Pua. Obey the Lord, and in the end, He will bless your obedience. You think about all that as we begin this look at the book of Exodus, and you have a great day.